Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Net Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Plays Already in Progress.
Alright, thank you DJ Q for bringing us back from the break in style. He is absolutely right. We are back with Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. I'm Jay Flama. I'm here with Rand Morissette and Tom Dope. And right now we're going to get to the JB's Best Trivia Question. This is where Tom and Rand each get a trivia question and try to win a bottle of JB's Best Hot Sauce and a t-shirt that says I'm a hottie. JB is actually John Berwa, the golf writer who used to work with PGA of America. And he spent many years writing a lot of terrific articles from all of the majors, and he wanted to chase his dream. He now makes hot sauces on every table in the Deep South. Rand, have you seen it yet in North Carolina?
I haven't, and we're big on barbecue, but I've missed out.
It's really good. It's basically a wing sauce in the bottle. You can put it in. You can put it in Bloody Marys. You can put it in spaghetti sauce. It's good on wrist tips, hips, and fingertips. So, all right. So now, Rand, I've got two envelopes. One's marked X, one's marked Y. They each have a different trivia question. Which one do you want?
Y.
All right. Here we go. Okay. Your category is authors. Okay, authors. What nationality was Bram Stoker?
Oh, good Lord.
Let's sound it out. You obviously know who Bram Stoker is.
Yes. I'm just trying to, I mean, does the country even still exist?
Yes.
I mean, I was just
for the record, everybody, I would have gotten this one wrong, too. I guessed England. For a giggle, Tom, do you have a guess?
I would guess Scotland, because I've heard the inspiration with that castle that's across the bay at Crudy Bay.
Well, you're the closest without getting it right, okay? He actually was Irish, which I never would have guessed. Uh-huh. I thought he was English, because the story takes place in London. A significant portion of it. The other guess I would have had is because Brahm is a Dutch name, I would have thought, you know, like Brahm Bones from, again, we go back to Sleepy Hollow, Legend of Sleepy Hollow, he was the bad guy. Brahm is short for Abraham.
Europe, for sure.
Yeah, that would have been a guess of mine, too. Maybe Transylvania or some of the ambiguous breakaway republic of some sort out there. All right, well, Tom, your turn now. So let me open up envelope X here. All right. Your category. Oh my God. Of all the people that get this question, you'll probably get it right. Okay. Well, here we go. Your category is B movies. B movies. All right.
My son would get this.
Well, you might get this, okay? Because this kind of dates our period. All right. In the movie Destroy All Monsters, Godzilla does battle with every other monster in the Toho movie catalog. Name any two other monsters Godzilla fights with in Destroy All Monsters.
Oh. Japanese monster movies. I used to watch that with my son when I was a kid. The one for sure is Mothra, the giant.
That's
monster.
One. Yes. Mothra is one, yes. So give us any other one.
The other ones were.
Sound it out, okay? What other monsters did he fight?
God, it's been a while.
Let's say we got the giant moth. How about the pterodactyl? No?
I don't remember the pterodactyl thing.
Do you remember the three-headed thing that flew?
A hydra. But...
there you go. Yes. Okay. That's good enough. Okay. We will accept that as the answer. Also called Deidre or Deidora. But yes, the hydra.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. There were also, we accepted Rodan and Gamera.
And Rodan is the one I was trying to remember because because my friends who are into B movies, every time you talk about Rodan Hole, they want it to be about Rodan.
I'm sorry. That's just a tough joke of the day right there. All right, well, congratulations. You know, pretty soon in the mail, you're going to be getting a bottle of JP's Best Hot Sauce. It really is terrific. So, all right, so I've been a football picks, and each of these games, obviously, there's some great golf courses around the cities where the games are being played. So after we figure out who's going to win the game, you'll also be able to tell us your favorite place and why out there. So let's start with Lions at Giants. Now, this one, we get a bit of a boost on this one. I'm taking the Lions because I get 10.5 points. So if the Lions get 10.5 points, you think they're going to win that bet or lose that bet?
Is Stafford
I'm for me, and it's scary to bet on the Lions, but they've been better this year, and I would take the point.
Rand, your thoughts? Lions at Giants.
Stafford must not be starting for the spread to be that big. If he's not starting, I would take the Giants.
Now, don't be fooled by that spread, because on the Jay's Plays show and on GNN, we do two-team teasers here, and that's why the line is so big. It's ordinarily a 4.5, but because we're teasing it with the other games, we get 10.5.
Well, then I'll go with the Lions, because I think the Giants are going to be flat from beating the Cowboys.
The Lions are much improved this year. They're not losing games that they used to lose. And my Steelers beat the bloody snot out of the Giants. It wasn't even close. So I don't know which Giants team is going to show up.
Well, actually, I believe those are the teams with the longest winning streaks. Aren't they? Haven't they both won either 5 or 6 in a row?
Well, since the Cowboys got beat last week and since the Raiders got beat 2 weeks
right.
ago, you might be right about that, yes. Or Seattle, perhaps. By the way, did any of you guys watch that atrocity of a football game last night?
I've actually been in the last 2 weeks.
I'm sorry, man, what'd you say?
I'm hoping you're not wearing that lime green thing while we're on the radio.
Oh, are you kidding me? Okay, they look like the flying highlighters, okay?
it was
our truce. Okay. Yeah, I like the part, though, where the punter got decked. The punter, okay, first of all, yeah, go ahead, man.
No, they look like Teletubbies. I mean, it was just embarrassing. I don't know what the NFL's doing.
Well, it's Nike trying to sell color rush jerseys, you know. They think that this looks good. Okay, that's the scary thing about it. But my favorite play from that game was, and both teams look foolish for this. I don't know what the Seahawks are doing in their punt coverage, but they really got burned twice yesterday. The punter went back and threw a pass on a fake punt, and if he hadn't thrown it short, they'd have had the first down by 20 yards. So they knew something. The Rams knew something the Seahawks didn't. But the second time out, and I've never seen anything so asinine since the Colts tried to do that fake punt last year on the Patriots, but they snapped the ball to the punter, who just ran straight up the middle with one guy in front of him. Nobody within 50 yards. And, of course, he trips over nothing. The ball pops into the air, and as he looks up to secure it, that's when he gets run over by the Mack truck of the defender. Okay, and he's laying there prone on the ground for 5 minutes. It was a ghastly game, 24-3. You know, did you get impressed by what you saw out of Seattle, Rand? Because I didn't really think that they looked that good.
No, but the Rams had beaten them the last 3 times, so it was just an important game for them to get in the rearview mirror with the win, and they did that. But it was, you know, they were 15.5-point favored, and they really didn't cover by that much. So, but, you know, Russell Wilson did bounce back from that horrific pick 5 game the week before. So,
yeah, I guess Green Bay, right.
Yeah.
All right, so New York City, okay, so the 3 of us will each pick a favorite around there. Rand, Tom, where are you taking me? And then I'll tell you where I'm taking you.
Oh, my God. You know, I grew up around New York City, and there's 50 good golf courses to choose from. It's sort of an embarrassment of riches there. we Rand mentioned it earlier. I'll take you to Garden City Golf Club because it's a pretty hard place to get in unless you know somebody. And it's, you know, it's one of the more subtle golf courses in the state. To a lot of people, it just looks like the greens are laying on the ground and there's nothing to it, but they all tilt away from you and it's really hard to get close to the hole. And it's a wonderful place to go play golf.
Absolutely. Rand, your turn.
There are two sister courses. I hate to give the cheap answer, but one's probably 30 minutes from Giant Stadium to the west in New Jersey, and the other is 30 minutes to the east. And the one in New Jersey would be Somerset Hills, and it's, to me, close to a twin sister course is Waikagil in New Rochelle. Both of them have great tumbling land, streams, running through it, holes hit the land in every which way. And it's just, you know, Parkland golf in general is viewed as the least appealing kind behind, obviously, Lynx golf and Heathland golf. But these are two stellar examples of how good Parkland golf can be.
I would do the same thing you did. I'm going to cheat and pick two. I'm taking you here, Rand, and Tom. I look very much forward to having you at Forest Gate. I absolutely love it there. You know, the fact that it is the last course that the Bloodline designed in America. I think Charles Banks threw everything plus the kitchen sink in there. But my first pick, you know, if I'm going to take two of my dear friends out to play someplace really amazing around New York City. We got to go to Wingfoot. Okay, West Course and East Course, magnificent restoration of the East and the magical, you know, round that is the West Course out there. The phenomenal greens, and the way that it is maintained for amateur play is so much different than when it is for a major championship. The rough is not anywhere near as long, or as the fairways aren't anywhere near as narrow, and the greens are kept at a reasonable speed, and an amateur golfer can go and have a good day there if he golfs his ball and if he tacks his way around wisely, you know, and with all of the history that's there, you know, that to me is the Yankee Stadium of golf.
Jay, you just picked three courses.
Well, yeah, okay, I didn't need to, but. All right, next ball game. I've got the Packers minus a half a point at the Chicago Bears. Your thoughts, boys?
Well, that's a dirty game this year.
Such a guy who reached the Lions.
and as bad as the Bears have been, I cannot pick Green Bay because I'm not going to pick a golf course around Green Bay that I like very much. So I'll go with the Bears.
All right, Rand.
I think the Packers are starting to play good ball, and Aaron Rodgers has zip back on his passes with the quick release. So I would go with Green Bay on that one, especially for, to me, Chicago's almost stopped playing. They've stopped trying, so that's not much points to be given, many points.
I think it's a mismatch, the receiving core of the Packers versus the Bears' secondary. I don't think that the Bears' defensive line can get as much pressure as they need to, you know, for the Bears to play a zone. And if they go man-to-man, the Packers' receivers are probably going to eat them alive. So, all right, so that means Chicago and Wisconsin. So, Rand, you take Wisconsin, and Tom, you take Chicago.
Well, I'd be remiss in not picking Aaron Hills, where I've had some very fun matches with my brother who works there, and I'm very keen to see how Aaron Hills is going to hold up for the upcoming U.S. Open.
Rand, I like when you have your matches with your dad, and I especially like when you have matches with your dad that end in bloodshed.
Well, I like matches with dad because I can beat him. My brother is, I can't, so that's a disappointing tale, but yes, you're right. That when Dad took that ball and they had it when he went over the green at 14 at North Berwick, that was an interesting moment.
I get a laugh every time I tell my friends that story. Okay, Tom, how about you for Chicago?
We do consulting on several of the best clubs in Chicago, and it's tough to just pick one. But the one I think is the most transformed in the last few years is Shoreacres up on the north shore of the lake. A Seth Rayner course, one of his very first, and it's built down through some ravines that feed out into the lake. And it used to be a little sleepy place, and they didn't really take care of it that well, but about 4 years ago, they hired a superintendent who was an assistant at Marion, and they put a little money into doing the rest of the restoration that we planned years ago, and it's just transformed the place. I mean, it is a really special place to go play golf now.
Chicago is a town that I have to get to. I have not yet had a chance to play golf in Illinois. It's one of the few states in the Union I haven't been to yet. But I have been in Wisconsin an awful lot. And we talked about Langford and Moreau in the first segment of the show. And I'm going to pick, and it's a public course, so everybody can go and play it, and it's every bit as good as so many of these great private golden age courses we're talking about. That's Laustonia, which is especially good, not only because of the strategy, not only because of the phenomenal greens, but a really cool routing, which in the middle of the golf course goes 5-3, 5-3, 5-3.
I'll second that one. I went back there last spring for the first time in 30 years. I literally hadn't been there since the mid-80s. And I was just blown away with how good that was. I mean, it cleared out a lot of the trees in between the holes, and you really get to see the contour of the ground and how much it comes into play. Although, frankly, I was a bigger fan of the front nine than the back. I mean, I just thought there was some terrific stuff on the front nine, the way it keeps changing direction on you, and half the time you're looking at the background of a hole. In the background of a hole, you see another hole, and you see a fairway bunker on another hole that looks like it's defending the green of the hole you're on. That's pretty wild stuff.
You're right about that. Every hole right out of the gate is really solid. Man, your thoughts?
Well, Jay, as you know, Tom picked it as one of his gourmet choices at the start of the Volume 3. I just come back to where can you read about a course like Laustonia, other than the Confidential Guide and Golf Club Atlas?
And Golf Course Architecture Volume 4 by yours truly, and at jfulman.com and at thegolfnewsnet.com. I wrote about Laustonia when I was out at the U.S. Open. It was the PGA Championship. When I was out at Whistling Straits for the PGA Championship in 2015, I also, in that same article, wrote about your concert venue there, Alpine Valley, which I think is vastly overrated, unfortunately. It's nowhere near as beautiful as some of the other, as a Greek theater or as a Red Rocks or as a gorge out in George Washington. The Gorge in George Washington, by the way, is right where Gamble Sands is. So imagine a concert venue right next to Gamble Sands.
But
Laustonia is a wonderful place. I like it a lot. All right, last game. We got the Kansas City Chiefs at home giving a half a point to the Tennessee Titans. Kansas City and Tennessee.
I have not seen either team play all year. And so I will go with Kansas City because that is where I've got a lot of family from.
Okay. Ram, your thoughts?
Well, I'm a big Andy Reid fan, just like I'm a big Bill Belichick fan. And is it stretching to then be able to talk about Prairie Dunes?
No, not at all.
Okay,
that's a great
pick. Right. So, I mean, yeah, that's an easy one. I mean, Andy's always got him playing hard-nosed football. And of course, Prairie Dunes is, about as fine a set of greens as there is in the country. So,
and here we go back to the theme we talked about in the first segment about underrated architects, okay? And we have to add Perry Maxwell's name to that list. It's very rare that you'll see one of the major magazines write about Perry Maxwell, but every golfer anywhere within 1,000 miles should try to get on Old Town in North Carolina, which, you know, his last truly great golf course, but what a magnum opus. I mean, really, what a way to finish. I think that one probably had to jump up a long way in your list, Rand, and a long way in the confidential guide, Tom.
You know, Tom hasn't
That was Volume 2, and it's right in the front of Volume 2. And then, you know, we actually didn't include Prairie Dunes, which is one of my favorite courses in the world, in Volume 3, or in the front of Volume 3, because I included Crystal Downs, my home club, which is a McKenzie design built by Perry Maxwell, and I figured I'd kill two birds with one stone and make that the entry for both of them in the front of the book.
Rand, throw us some more information as well on Prairie Dunes. I wish I could jump in, but it is the one major Maxwell course I haven't seen.
Well, the only issue with Prairie Dunes is whether they can control the gunch on the sides of the fairway. We all know that Kansas can be a windy state, and if you know you go there with 4, 7, or 8 handicap guys and you get caught in 25, 30 mile an hour winds, and you can just spend all day with your head down beating around in the gunch unless they've had a good burn and everything else. So that's the one reservation that I would have. And that's, you know, frankly, that's not an issue at Old Town, Jay, as you know. And I do agree with you, Jay. Old Town's another example of a course that has been transformed. And again, I hate to repeat myself, but I would say 3 points on the Doak scale based on Corin Crenshaw's work there. And in fact, I think Old Town rang out the end of the golden age, because didn't it open in 1939?
That's exactly right. Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. It sort of was the final, you know, the last hurrah for the first golden age of golf course architecture.
No better way to end it.
Now, here's an interesting question. Randy, you were asking me about some of, you know, you said that if you play 3 better courses this year, let me know. Happily, I played a fistful of good ones, one of them being Stream Song. I played both the red and the blue. So, Tom, tell us, how did you handle courses that you designed, and how did you handle Cabot Lakes, getting those courses evaluated for the confidential guide? Because obviously you wouldn't rate your own golf course.
I did rate my own golf courses because I thought it would really be a cop-out not to. And, it, you know, it certainly helped to have 3 other people there rating them alongside me, so, you know, if my scores are much too high and they're disagreeing, it's obvious. But, you know, I think all my readers assume that I'm going to like my own courses in general, so maybe I rate them slightly higher than someone else does. And the funny thing is, sometimes I don't. You know, Rand's grades are actually higher on a couple of my courses than I give them myself. So,
which ones in particular?
Black Forest in this book, Cape Kidnappers in New Zealand. So there is one more. He's trying to convince me to give Barnbuckle Dunes a 10. He says he's going to.
Oh my goodness, that's
you
a
know, but that's volume. That's volume 5, so we're still a little bit away from making that official. But you know, I mean, the other reason I wanted to write about the courses is I know them a lot better than anybody else. You know, it's, you know, as much as we try to rate courses objectively when we've only seen them once, I think that's the big problem with all the rankings that you see, is all these panelists come and play the golf course one time and then rate it like they know it like the back of their hand, and that's kind of silly. You know, I'll talk to people all the time that, you know, they'll tell me they didn't like a particular hole on one of my courses, and I think, that's weird, that's one of the better holes. And then, you know, later they'll talk about, well, they made a 7 on that hole, they hit it in the trees off the tee. And so, you know, so they didn't really see the hole. It's not that they, you know, they just... You know,
the guy who's in the trees a lot. Okay, I make a point of getting back to the fairway so I can see what I'm looking at.
Right. But, yeah, but, you know, when you know, you can't help but be a little biased in favor of a course if you play it well, or against it if you play it badly. You know, when I used to run the Golf Magazine list of the top 100 courses in the world, I can tell you there's a very, very strong calculation or correlation between a player having won a major championship on a course and thinking it's one of the top 10 courses in the world.
Well, that I will grant you. Yes, okay, that happens all the time. But as an 18 handicapper, I'm approaching 500 courses. Since I don't keep score, I don't have to worry as much about that. I can play absolutely ghastly like I did today at Crystal Downs and still absolutely love the place. And I can, you know, play really well at a place like Forestgate and love it just as much. Now, mind you, playing really well at Forestgate means that you're probably going to be 5 or 6 shots higher than playing really well at St. George's. Because even though they're similar, 6,400-yard golf courses, 6,400-yard golf courses, you know, one of them is just much more tough to... You know, you have to tack your way around carefully at Forestgate. At St. George's, you can swing a little freer. But that's the beauty of it, you know, that you can't just look at the scorecard and get an idea of how tough or how easy it is. You know, that's
right.
A two-dimensional thing. So.
Well, I don't doubt you, Jay, that some people don't let the way they play affect their opinion of a golf course, but a lot of people do. And
I'm sure they do.
You know, that's why we're the writers. You know, if you let some of the panelist guys write about what they, you know, how they're voting, you'd see that they're voting based on not having played that well. Because I hear it all the time from them.
I'll give you a great example, okay? Annika Sorenstam, who I absolutely love, one of my very favorite people. You know, she comes to Forestgate frequently. But my favorite story is the time that she took on Brad Faxon in a match at Forestgate. Minus celebrity matches. Now, mind you, Annika put on a clinic. She put a peach bucket 60 yards out into the fairway, and while talking to the crowd about shot making, put one after the other, into the peach bucket. At one point, she goes, if you take a bad swing outside and you're going to shank it, and she deliberately shanked a ball off her own face on the billboard. Trish and Rich goes, damn, I was even good at that. And that's when Brad Faxon screams out, all right, guy, you're supposed to be retired. Will you miss for a minute? And so she goes out of the golf course, and when she's trying to understand what Faxon is telling her, okay, you can tell all of a sudden that the light just went off. Brad's like, this is a Perez, this is a chocolate drop, this is a double plateau, this is why you do this, this is why you do this. And she's blinking at him, and finally, right in front of me too, he looks at me and goes, this is when she was going to design the course down in Rio with Jack Nicklaus. He says to her, Annika, if you're going to do this, you have to study these things and know them. The 5 or 6 people said Latin. So. But you have to, like, you know, there are looky loos on that. Yeah.
Jay, I've got a story along those lines. I'm going to ask you all to tell me who said this. In 2000, okay. I think it was 2000, call it 2003. I called up a man and said, I would like to come see your golf course. And his answer was the most interesting answer I've ever heard. And he said, would you like to walk around it or would you like to play? Guess who that was?
Well, I hear that all the time, but
do you?
Let me think here. Oh, yeah, all the time I get that.
Wait, you wouldn't play, you would just walk around?
Oh no, I would play, absolutely.
No.
I mean, you know, but I
he
hear
was
people...
asking he was asking, and I think it's a great question. You know, if you really want to go study the architecture, you don't have to go play. Let's just go walk around.
Oh yeah.
No, that's
sure.
True. In fact, when I was in college and writing to all the great courses in the U.S. to go see them for the first time. I think one of the things that impressed the green chairman or whoever I was writing to that they invited me to come was the fact that I didn't really ask to play. I just asked if I could, you know, I wanted to study the course. Could I come see it? And, playing was just a bonus if they invited me to play. And I wound up getting invited to play nearly everywhere I went.
Yeah, that's how it works organically for me, too. My thought, though, is that we need to see what the ball's going to do when it runs along the ground, okay? Because it's not what a golf course, this is what I tell everybody, this is the other shoe, when they ask me what's the difference between a good golf course and a great golf course, is it doesn't matter how it looks, it's how it plays. So you kind of have to play it, and sometimes you have to play it over and over. All right, I'm going to ask
you. Let me ask you one question, Jay.
Yeah.
When we build courses, they're dirt till opening day. So how would we know we were doing good work unless we could visualize what's going to happen in the ball?
Well, it's funny you should say that too, because that's my whole series called The Architect's Progress, where I'll go look at it before, during, and after construction or restoration or whatever it might be. You know, but you guys are better at that than I am. I mean, you know, it's still, I try to play that game when I'm driving along the road and I see what looks to be great terrain for golf, and I try to picture in my head, you know, what a good golf hole might look like. But without a topo map in front of you, without walking the property extensively and seeing everything, it's still a fun game to play, you know, to see how good the terrain is for golf. Again, something you taught me, Tom, is, you know, movement vertically in the earth and movement horizontally in the fairways, and you too, Rand. So, all right, hazard a guess. Who would have asked you? Were they in America or were they abroad? If they were abroad, I'd say it's Pat Rudd.
No, it was on Long Island.
Okay, on Long Island. I'm going to take a wild guess here, man. And I'm going to say John Anderson of St. George's.
No, that's a good guess, though.
All right.
Even though in 2003,
I have no idea, but
it wasn't probably as good a guess.
Oh, yeah, 2003. Well, would it have been, you would have played national already, so it can't be national. Long Island. What was big on Long Island in 2003? Shinny, maybe?
I'm going to tease Tom a little bit more. I think the single best line in the entire book he wrote on this course in his review.
Okay.
Want
me
to read
it? What was the line? Yeah, what's the line?
Okay, Friars Head has gotten better every time I've gone back to see it. It's become iconic once.
Okay, another great one to mention. Again, we bring up Corin Crenshaw. A lot of fun at Friars Head. There's an example, again, of wasn't it 1 foot of elevation change on the front nine on that potato farm?
No. You had a couple of moraine in the round six and all that, so no.
All right, well, then I must be horribly, horribly wrong. I played Friars Head once, actually with Carrie Lichtenstein, and we had a lovely day. All right, tell us, man, what is it, and you too, Tom, what is it about Friars Head that you like so much?
Well, I'll tell you the story. I mean, I hope I'm not talking out of line. I was talking with Ken Baxt 3 or 4 years ago, and he was trying to invest in a machine that was going to cut the fairway a bit different. And in particular, he was worried about the left-hand bunker on this uphill par 5 seventh hole. And I was like, well, really, Ken, the tee balls are releasing and then going into that bunker. And he said, yes, of course they are. But I want them to release into that bunker at different speeds so that they end up in different positions within the bunker so that the golfer has to confront a different shot when, you know, each time that happens. So it's that attention to detail that only occurs when you have a man who is there day in, day out, thinking, refining. And it's one of the things to me that has changed from the 1990s, where it was build a course, move on to the next, build a course, move on to the next, stamp them out. Now we've got people staying at places and refining, and just pushing the you know, envelope and the detail work to the nth degree. And it's a, you know, it's a pleasure to be around and able to chronicle stuff like that.
You raise a magnificent point there, Rand, with that story, especially about disbursement of the ball and what it's going to do after it lands. I have a similar story from Chambers Bay. Okay, I'm sure I'm going to take a lot of grief from people for telling this, because there's a bit of a humble brag in this. But as you both know, since I've been interviewing and working with Robert Trent Jones Jr., I've become friends with him, and I've gotten to work with him on some other things, too. And I got to play Chambers Bay with Bob on January 4th, a couple of years ago, on the same day that Mike Davis and the USGA were there to help prep it for the U.S. Open. Now, the seventh hole there, that magnificent dogleg right par 4 that when you turn the corner sends up that hill and then has those two big, huge berms on either side, and then the green chiseled in, you know, pedestal there into the side of the hill. They were having a problem with if, you know, you didn't catch the top of the green and came down the false front, the balls would end up in the same place and you'd have the problem of so many divots there. And, you know, we stopped there, all of us. And, you know, with Davis right there, and you know, I can't remember who else was there, but there must have been 10 or 12 of us. Okay, I got a chance to redeem myself because in front of everybody, I sliced the drive so badly on one hole, I ended up in a bunker in completely the wrong hole. But Bob turns to me, he said, Jay, what would you do about this? How would you fix this problem? So I'm sitting there just absolutely petrified, you know, to even so much as open my mouth because, my, you know, Mike Davis is standing right there. And then the thought hit me. I said, why don't we grade this section so that it sort of slopes off to the sides a little bit, too? That way when the balls, you know, come down the false front, they're going to, you know, spin off in a little bit of a wider pattern. And while, of course, they didn't do that, we all commented, hey, that's not a bad idea. It actually does solve the problem. It doesn't solve the problem for a touring pro who doesn't want to be embarrassed and thinks that a shot like that is too hard. You know, we'll test a 300-yard par 3, but we won't test, you know, a false front green that's too severe, okay? And, but still, you don't want to look bad. But it was kind of fun being able to talk about that level of golf course architecture there with Bob and with the rest of the guys there and solve problems like that. That's the most interesting thing about this craft is the combination of problem solving in terms of the architecture and strategies while at the same time remembering the golf course is a living, breathing entity that needs turf grass care, that needs water, and that needs to be carefully paid attention to all of the maintenance as well. Culver being a perfect example.
And you just mentioned maintenance. I think it's important to say that, you know, Rand told a great story about Ken Dax, the owner at Fireside, but, you know, golf course superintendents put that same level of attention to detail into their golf courses over time. And, you know, there's a lot of great ones working around the world today. You know, the sort of the guys they look up to are the people like Claude Crockford, who was at Royal Melbourne for 40 years, or Brad Steiniger, who was at Pine Valley for longer than that. And, you know, I remember when I worked for Pete Dye, he said, he asked me one day, just out of the blue, he said, so of all the courses you've ever seen, which one did the most, like, test plots and turf research of any of them? And I thought about it for a couple minutes, and I'd just been to Pine Valley the year before, and they had all kinds of that stuff going. They were trying to figure out which native grasses work best in the rough. So I said, Pine Valley, and he said, yep, and it's the best golf course.
Wow.
Well, guys, it's really been terrific having you on the show. You know, I love it when you come on. When is Volume 4 coming out?
Actually, interestingly enough, Volume 5 is going to come before Volume 4 because we're taking more to Asia and Australia in the next year than it will to Europe, which is going to be Volume 4. But I'm actually going to take a break from doing it for a little bit, you know, to get to some of the places I want to see in Asia and Australia and Europe is going to take a bit more determined travel than I had to do when I could jump in my car and go across upstate New York. So we're going to take a break from, you know, there won't be a new book in 2017. It won't be till 2018 until we get Volume 5 put out to give myself enough time to get to Asia and see some things that very few Americans ever go see.
Well, I look very much forward to getting together with both of you at some time. You're welcome to come to Forest Gate and hang out anytime you like. Or if you happen to be near New York City or coming through upstate New York, it'd be fantastic to get together with you. Especially you, Rand, because I want to school you in chess.
I look forward to that. Because my 13-year-old son has me playing great chess right now.
Really? Okay, has he beaten you yet?
Oh yeah, no. Oh, he's bored playing me, so we're having great times.
Are the two of you at the point where you're reading the games of great players and analyzing them and all of that?
Oh, we were just following the World Chess Championships. I mean, people think that following golf course architecture, you're a complete dork. Wait till they find out you're, you know, interested in chess too. I mean, talk about the double whammy.
Well, out of curiosity, what, you know, I know that the World Chess Championships tend to sometimes be intellectual battles over certain openings and theories. You know, at the very highest level right now, what openings are they playing?
What is it, the Rue something? I've actually got
him. Oh, the Rue Lopez.
Yeah, the Rue Lopez or something. I've got him a chess book under the tree that details that kind of stuff, so...
then you and I will have a fantastic time playing together. I love playing the Ruby Lopez.
Thanks for having us, Jay.
So you are. By the way, before I let you go, can you happen to name either of the great chess battles that involved exploration of the Ruby Lopez? There's two of them in particular.
I cannot.
That I can't, the only chess I remember watching when I was about the same age as Rand's son was Fischer and Spassky.
That's right, Fischer and Spassky. When Bobby played black, they battled over the Ruy Lopez, and when Spassky played white, played white, they battled over the Queen's Gambit Decline Carta Tower system, which is also Spassky's favorite defense. Rand, can you happen to name the other one? It's just as big. It's the other big modern battle.
It would have to be Kasparov?
Kasparov versus Karpov, exactly. Each of them loved to play the Ruy Lopez, and their two world championship matches featured several different lines. Now, I got to tell you, okay, I also bought a book on the Ruy Lopez, and I don't understand a damn thing, okay? There comes a point where you're sitting there going through those games, and you're like, why in God's name would they make that move? And there's no explanation. Meanwhile, there's a move that looks obvious to you that because they didn't do it, it doesn't work, but you have no idea why it doesn't work. So, anyway, it's been great having you on.
For such a macho country that, you know, chess is the sport in Russia, I mean, it's just very interesting.
You know, it's an important point, though. It goes to show, you know, that they still are really focusing on strong academics, strong analytics, strong scientific and mathematical minds. You know, I wonder if too many of our kids are playing video games for too long. But that's a story for another day. Boys, thank you so much. Guys, we're going to be back with our next guest on the Jay's Place Show in just a couple of minutes. I'm Jay Plummer. You're listening to the Golf News Network Radio Network.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Place on the Golf News Net Radio Network.